Pod Tackler, episode 338, Dawn, Departure, and Complex, for January 18th, 2013. And welcome back to Podtacular, the unofficial Hand Universe podcast. I'm your host, Dust Storm.
I'm Daffling.
And this time we're doing something a little bit different. We just finished up our Waypoint Bulletin podcast for our last show. And now we're going to be pulling together all those little mini-series things that we just talked about on the last show as well. So if you've seen on our podcast feed, you have seen a couple of things come out for Spartan Ops Campaign and War Games. And those are kind of little mini-series that I've been picking people out from the community who have been on the show before and are real subject matter experts for the specific parts that I'm pulling them for. And they're giving us some good tips and strategy suggestions were applicable. And for the map stuff, it's weapon spawns and strategy. For Spartan Ops, it's a little bit of the story and a little bit of strategy where weapon crates are, where enemy spawns are, and all that good stuff. So this episode is primarily going to be a mashup of those, but just kind of wanted to introduce to all the three different segments that we have and what the first ones are going to be and kind of how this format flow is going to go as well. So every one of these is going to have a campaign mission, a Spartan Ops mission, and a multiplayer map associated with it until we run out of either one of those. So for the multiplayer, we'll have 8. For the maps, we'll have 10, and then for each additional map pack, we'll do these again, and then Spartan Ops, as episodes come out, we'll do that as well. So the first bit you're going to hear is for the campaign, and the first level on that is Dawn. So this is where we first wake up from Cryo. We have Cortana, we're on the forward to Dawn, being attacked by the Covenant. So just a couple quick questions for each section, and we'll move on. Halo 4 has traditionally had the first level be kind of a tutorial, although this one didn't really seem as much of a tutorial as some of the past ones. What do you think in terms of kind of introducing new players to the campaign? How well did Halo 4 really do this for this level?
I think it introduced them to a lot of things that weren't even really in the game later on.
It's like the quick time events?
The climbing thing. We didn't even do anything like that ever again, I don't think.
Other time we did it was at the very end of the game where we had to do.
That's like getting up from a ledge. I mean, we didn't do like a whole climbing up an elevator shaft and.
Right.
Just stuff like that. What was it? Pulling apart the door with their.
Oh, yeah, prying open the door.
Yeah. I think what happened there was when they first started making Halo 4 way back when, they were like, okay, this needs to be like this new revolutionary Halo, feel very fresh and, you know, different. Let's put different stuff in here, like the climbing the elevator and the prying the open, make you feel like Chief, give Halo this new feel. Let's put all this like new stuff in here, and you know, and so they went with that for the first like mission or two, and then that kind of like new stuff kind of just like wore off, I think, as time went on. And then they kind of got to the point where they're just like let's just make a freaking Halo game. And then you go, like, there's the rest of the campaign. And then they're like, and then by the end of it, they're like, we have this stuff at the beginning still. I guess we should throw it in there, like, at the end, like, some kind of, like, continuity to it, these quick time events. I just don't think they really emphasize them that much, which isn't really good or bad. It's like, kind of, who cares?
It was an interesting addition to the game. I think, with talking from a few people, the quick time events were at least not too overly done in the game, but at the same point, it's kind of takes you a little bit out of the element, from traditional Halo. They were put in, I guess, pretty good spots for where they were put in, but it at that point, it's just like,
it's
okay.
It's not really useless.
Yeah, but it's not really
useful.
It's not
like that cool either. Yeah. It's just there.
Right.
It's like kind of neutral.
Because that's really the only introductory part of the Halo 4 campaign. I mean, if you look at Halo 1 In Halo 2, you had the whole kind of training tutorials there. Halo 3 didn't really focus on it too much. I guess we kind of have a similar thing with Halo 4. I guess most people have played Halo by this point to where, or they've played other first-person shooters where they have a general idea of what's going on.
Yeah. Or, like, maybe they put a... Well, I guess that kind of... This is, like, the same thing as what I said, but it's, like, they put those... They'll probably open the door and going up the elevator shaft. They put that stuff in there at the beginning to really suck.
The vacuum?
No. Both new and returning players really suck them into the campaign, like, right from the beginning. Like, make you, like, feel like you're the chief. And then, like, it's like, you know, they'll get so sucked into this, like, so enthralled that they'll keep playing and, like, killing Covenant. And, like, they'll be having so much fun eventually that they won't even notice that the QuickTime stuff isn't even there anymore. They're just playing Halo at this point. Kind of thing, you know.
What do you think of the throwback to kind of a lot of the Halo 2 stuff being boarded on there?
It's pretty fun, you know. It was fun, you know.
It was kind of a nice homage to how older Halo,
yeah,
Halo worked.
Oh, you know what's so funny? I was doing this like, I was doing the first mission on like heroic co-op with ODST, JY, and Private Church. Shout out to them. And it's so funny. Like when we got to the end, we're all like watching like the same Master Chief as he's like hurtling through space toward Requiem.
Uh huh.
It's I swear we were all laughing so hard. It's like he's really like watched like through his eyes and like what his hands are doing as he's like you're going through space like first person. He's just like going so fast through space and it's all this like wreckage and like ship parts all around him. He's just like punching things out of the way. Like, get the fuck out of the way. Like, he's just like pushing and punching like all this wreckage like out of his way as he's going like just towards Requiem. It's just kind of like funny if you really like pay attention. It's kind of just like,
yeah.
He's punching these giant ships out of his way. Like, get the fuck out of my way.
Yeah, get all the debris. Get out of here.
Yeah. Yeah, everyone go back and watch that. It's kind of like, you can make it kind of funny.
Well, I thought that was a good thing to keep you in the first-person perspective while you were falling. So I thought that was a pretty good idea on their part. So the first campaign mission we actually did with Fumo Jive, who actually is the creator of Podtacular way back in the day. So we had him on to do the first one. So you'll hear that as our first segment. Our second segment is Spartan Ops, and we are doing that exclusively with Halo Fan for Life. We have partnered up with him to do a complete Spartan Ops coverage. So we're doing a podcast bit, then he has a write-up that goes into a little bit more of the finer details, and then we're doing a video segment as well, kind of as a walkthrough. So the first one was, in my opinion, a very good introduction to what Spartan Ops is actually going to be for the rest of the time that we have Halo 4. It really eases you into the experience, kind of gives you a feel of how Spartan Ops is going to be, really does a good job of setting up the baseline story of Infinity coming back to Requiem after the events of Halo 4 with Master Chief. This set of chapters is kind of really basic, really simple to do. Not too many complex things going on. The enemies aren't too hard. It does a really good job of, again, easing players into the new experience. So this, of course, is replacing the firefight mode from Halo ODST and Halo Reach. So what do you think of the comparison to having this being a replacement for firefight?
What, Spartan Ops?
Yeah. Do you think it's a good substitute for firefight, or do you think that what are your general thoughts on Spartan Ops as a whole?
It works. I know stuff like Shootout in Valhalla, that was pretty popular. I feel it's enough like firefight, you know. I think it places it just fine.
Yeah, and you can definitely tell where certain parts are definitely very firefight like and then there's other parts that are more campaign like where you have to go around and go to objectives or activate switches and all that stuff. There's a lot of activating switches. I think that's primarily because that's one of the only ways you can really interact with something. I would like to see a little bit more variety in that if it's possible. But that kind of stuff it gets a little redundant after a while.
Yeah.
A good thing about having the next six or next five episodes coming out really soon, though, is that we get all new play environments for the entirety of Spartan Ops. So none of the environments that were used in the first five episodes of Season 1 are going to be used in the last five episodes of Season 1. So that's going to be really nice.
Yeah.
So our matchmaking coverage, or our War Games coverage, starts off on Complex. And we did that with a friend who's actually visiting me right now. And he's been on the show a few times. I think he's been on the show 8 or 9 times. And he's big into multiplayer, big into the competitive scene. So we decided to do Complex. So we talked about some of the weapon spawns, the initial team spawns, and talked about some strategies for when you're playing CTF, game types like SWAT, Flag, I already said Flag, Oddball, and other Slayer game types. Complex is one of those maps for Slayer. Most of the time, it's a balanced game, but if someone gets an upper hand and really controls an area well, you're pretty much screwed. Same thing for Capture the Flag. It also is very dependent on what kind of teammate you get. Complex is one of those maps where I usually choose to kind of get away from the norm of if Havens play too much or if Ragnarok's play too much. Complex seems to be kind of one of those good go-to maps just to kind of get out of a cycle. What about you, Daft? What do you think of Complex as a whole?
To me, it feels like that one Black Ops 1 multiplayer map with the rocket ship off to the side. Like that thing called Launch or something.
Oh, yeah.
Doesn't it remind you of that? Because it's like, they both have those rocket pad room, I don't know, whatever you want to call it, off to the side. Like, you know,
it's a factory.
You just go in there and there you go. It's like, it feels like so similar in its design and the shape and the layout.
I don't know if the...
A little too similar.
I didn't think it was that similar, but I can see what similarities you are pulling from. I think the architecture and the layout's significantly different, though. But I guess kind of the overall placement of some of the major landmarks does kind of, I guess, have that feel to it. I don't know. I've never even thought about it that way.
Yep.
Okay. So we will let you guys listen to these segments now. We just wanted to do a quick introduction for what we're trying to do here. And I hope you guys enjoy. Hello everyone, welcome to part one of our campaign coverage. For this first one, we are going to be talking with the former host of Podtackler, the founder of Podtackler, Fumo Jive. Hello, Fumo.
What's up, guys?
Not too much, we're just enjoying some Halo 4 as of late.
Sweet. Yeah, likewise.
It's been lots and lots of fun. So, it's been a while since you've been around. For those who don't know, for our more recent new subscribers, Fumo Jive was the one that started Podtackler all the way back in 2005, so we've been around for quite a while, and we'd like to pull him on the show every once in a while to see if he kind of keeps up with his Halo info and see how well he's kept that podcasting ability.
Well, for once I actually am keeping up with some Halo stuff, so that's a good thing.
Yay! Hopefully it'll be perfect for today's discussion, which is going to be the first mission of Halo 4, which is, of course, Dawn. We've kind of already talked about the prologue and our campaign spoiler episode, so we're not going to cover that one as its own little segment. But just in case you guys are wondering, what we're doing here is kind of splitting each mission into a segment, and we're going to do the same thing with all the multiplayer maps, the new game types, and Spartan Ops. So you're going to get little bits and pieces of the kind of greater podcasting experience that you would normally get, and you'll receive that on your feeds, whether it's through iTunes or Zune or Feedburner, and then they'll all be compiled into one grandiose episode every week. So that will be kind of pulled together for you guys in episode form later. But if you want to get the tidbits together, then these are going to be made available to you as their own kind of independent segment. And this first one, of course, is we're covering Dawn. So Dawn is the first campaign level, and this is, of course, where you find out that you are not so much in truce with the Covenant as you thought you were.
Mm-hmm.
So, but to start things off, we see Cortana kind of being woken up from this weird kind of scanning that's going on throughout the ship, and it's about time where she made a decision to wake up Chief. So she pulls up this holographic display that's kind of overviewing the status of the rest of the ship as it's floating in space. Multiple systems have failed. There's limited life support and other systems on the ship have minimal operating capabilities, and she decides to wake Chief. So
pretty trashed.
Yeah. And of course, what we saw with Fordun to Dawn, she's not quite herself, but Chief doesn't quite know that yet. So we see Cortana wake Chief. Chief's like, where are we? What's going on? And Cortana basically says that we're still floating in outer space, still on the Dawn. And before they really get too much into details on what's going on, Chief grabs Cortana, gets out of the cryo tube, and they start to make their way through the ship. And the first little thing here in terms of strategy for the mission is there's a little Easter egg slash achievement. So as soon as you kind of go out of the cryo area, there is a metal bridge that you go over. If you actually go down the stairs, you can go down and find a terminal that's basically the history of Master Chief, a kind of an archive of what's happened over the past Halo games. And there's actually an achievement for that. And
yep. This one I totally missed. I'm looking forward to checking this out some more.
Yeah, so this achievement is called Digging Up the Past. It's worth 20 gamer score. And the description is, found and accessed Chief's record in Mission 1. And basically what the terminal is it kind of goes into the history of how John became a Spartan, what happened during the events of Reach, Halo 1, Halo 2, and kind of all the way leading up to where he is now. And they even have a bit where they said Chief went to the Ark and blew up the replacement Halo ring and now is floating in deep outer space. So it's more or less a quick summary of what's happened in the past games if you haven't played any Halo game before. So it's a nice little nod to the rest of the franchise.
Is it a video or is it all text?
So it's all just audio. So it's like the audio logs from ODST.
Okay.
It's just this one audio stream that plays out from this terminal. And you actually have to stand by it in order for it to listen to it. The audio is locally played on that terminal. And okay. There's a couple other terminals throughout the rest of the mission that you can go find. It'll give you status on the ship and different systems like weapon systems, life support, gravity systems, and all that stuff. So I think there's two of those other terminals that are similar to that first one scattered throughout the map. So it's an interesting little Easter egg if you haven't played or if you haven't found it yet and you're wondering where that achievement is, now you know. So I guess Fuma will kind of go discover that for himself a little bit later when he has time.
Yeah.
But back to Chief and Cortana. We, as I said before, Chief really doesn't know that Cortana is going a little crazy. So with that aside, Cortana reports that there's been multiple intrusion alerts that have been reported across the ship. And you make your way through a couple of doorways, and Chief asks, how long have I been out? And Cortana says, 4 months, 4 years, 7 months, and 10 days. So a better part of time has passed by, and a lot has happened between what the events of Halo 3 and now.
Mm-hmm.
And if you guys remember previous discussions that we've had on the show and even throughout some of the books and other canon that 343 has talked about, smart AIs, which Cortana is one, kind of go rampant, go crazy after 7 years. And she's been put in service in a long time before that when she first met Chief. So Chief probably has this notion in the back of his mind that Cortana's kind of at that point. Maybe not, but after you make your way through some of the corridors, I'm just going to say this out since it's kind of not spoiler anymore, but the Didact scan comes through the ship and Chief's like, what's that? And Cortana's like, it's some high intensity scan that hasn't been marked before. It's unknown. So already you're kind of starting to dive into the mystery of the Halo 4 story. It's obviously not something Covenant. So the mystery's there, but there's really no time. You're still making your way through trying to get to the command deck to see what's really going on. And we get our first kind of action sequence where we pry open the elevator doors and then stuff comes flying out and you have to do these little quick time events. What was your kind of impression of the quick time events and having to move back and forth between the rails as stuff was falling down?
I love that stuff. It's kind of nice to have a little bit of pseudo interactivity sometimes because like the opposite is something like Mirror's Edge where it's like way over the top, too much control to where it just becomes tedious. So sometimes points like that where it just gives you enough interactivity to kind of be part of the scene while still keeping it fun and interesting is always cool, in my opinion.
Okay. Did you think there was just the right amount of quick time or not enough quick time? Or
I thought it was just fine. I mean, obviously, you don't want to, with a game like Halo, you don't want to make the entire thing quick time events. But,
right.
But you know, something to kind of get people's feet wet a little bit for some of the action that's going to be taking place. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we've never really had quick time been incorporated into a Halo game before. So this was not necessarily a curveball, but it was something a little bit out of left field. But I think for the most part, people took it very good and really enjoyed the quick time sequences that we had throughout the rest of the game as well.
Yeah. Well, I know some people just really hate quick time events, and I don't know. I never really understood that, but to each their own, I suppose.
Yeah. And the window for the QuickTime events is quite large in this game. I think they kind of did that just because it's new to the franchise and they don't want I don't think they want the story to be adversely affected by the fact that you can't hit a QuickTime event like the bomb defusal in Battlefield 3.
Oh yeah.
It's like that one if you wait too long you blow up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It kind of reminds me, I saw this one Prototype 2, where there was a QuickTime event, which is basically like a tutorial that says press X to, you know, use your super arm or something like that.
Okay.
But if you never press X, it basically just goes slow-mo for a while, and then eventually, like, things stop happening. There was never, like, something taken into account if they never did press X. So, hopefully it's thought something like that, but I don't know. I got through it and didn't bother to not get through it. So
time stood still.
Yeah, it was kind of funny in the video. It was like there was a bad guy that's like swinging his arm towards you and stuff, and it's like press X to block or something, and you just don't press anything, and eventually he just keeps swinging his arm slowly, slowly, and then just kind of stops swinging it and just kind of sits there. It's like he never pressed it. What happened?
That's funny. All right. So after the first set of quick time events, or actually the second quick time event that we have is the elite kind of running up to you with a sword and you basically punch him into the elevator well. And that's the part where you're kind of like, well, we're obviously not at peace with the Covenant anymore. We're fighting elites again.
Yep.
So there's been quite a bit of talk of whether or not adding the elites or the Covenant back in and kind of bringing the same enemy class back in from before was there's been some questions about that move. What was your opinion on seeing having to fight Covenant again?
Well, I think I've expressed this before, is that I've had enough of the Covenant And I was kind of, in some ways, I was going, have we had enough with the darn Covenant already? I mean, we've been fighting them for 10 years now. But I think they did do a really good job of making them feel, even the grunts, they made them all feel more cohesive and more dangerous. So it made it a little bit more interesting anyway, and not so much like cartoon characters.
Yeah, and they actually sound somewhat threatening.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, but sound is a big improvement, especially with the grunts, but all of them, really.
Yeah. There's still the Grunt Birthday Party Skull.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a lot of fun to play with. Oh, yeah. It's a lot of fun to play with.
Yep, exploding heads.
Yeah. So after a little while, you finally get to the control room, and there's the infamous assassination elite that you can go and assassinate, and then you take out the rest of the grunts that are in there. You open the doors, and then you see quite a few Covenant carriers out there, and banshees and dropships. And at this point, it's really starting to kick in. It's like, okay, this is serious. We are definitely fighting Covenant now. It's not just kind of a rogue squad. There's an entire fleet out there. So this is kind of setting the ground for like, okay, yep, you're fighting Covenant throughout the rest of the game.
Yeah.
So this pretty much sets it in stone at this point.
The control room was no joke either, though. I remember going through that part. It was pretty tough because there was a lot of them all over the place.
Yeah, there are a couple of choke points in this mission. The control room, I think, was the control room, and then when you were outside at the missile pad, I think those were pretty much the two biggest ones.
Yeah, definitely.
So
the missile pad was tough too because just there was so much wide open space and there were snipers all over the place. So that didn't
there was only one sniper.
Okay. I guess he was just getting me a lot.
Quite possibly. So and for this control room part, it actually kind of goes back to, it's almost a flashback to Halo 2 where you see the drop ships come in, they break in the windows, they have the tubes where the Covenant come in, and then thankfully you only have to fight two different pods. It's not like numerous pods you have to fight through.
Yeah.
But that was kind of a nod back to Halo 2's intro. And there's two elites and six grunts they have to go through.
I remember that in Halo 2. There was that whole segment where they hooked up right to the windows and they came flooding in. You had to fight them. That was a good part.
Yeah. So this felt very similar to that.
Yeah.
So after you kill all the Covenant that kind of boarded you at that point and jumped you, Cortana says the only way to take out one of the cruisers is to mainly launch one of the missiles that are outside. So you make your way to an elevator, and it's very reminiscent of Halo 2 because you have that elevator up to the MAC cannon. Well, this you have the elevator to go outside to shoot another explosive thing. So yeah. Very, very reminiscent of the Halo 2 mission, Cairo Station, which is actually the first mission. So the nice thing about it is it didn't feel too much like Halo 2, even though there are lots of nods back to it.
Uh-huh.
But so I just find it interesting that they pulled a lot of things from Halo 2 in order to make this first campaign sequence go.
Yeah. Yeah, it was good, though. I really liked that part with the whole missile bays outside and everything. And
uh-huh.
Got to get in there and go around the side to unlock the bay doors, but then they get stuck, and then you have to run over there. And yeah. It was a bit tough.
It reminds me of a couple of like sci-fi moments, actually. There are actually a couple of Stargate moments I remember where they have to like go outside and fix something and then come back in. So it's very sci-fi-ish. You have to go outside to fix something that is on the outside. You can't just fix it inside.
Yeah.
So going throughout the rest of the mission, you have, I think, about two or three different kind of groups of Covenant that you have to fight through before you get outside. It's probably a good idea to pick up plasma pistols at this point, because if you're playing on anything more than normal, so if you're playing on heroic or legendary, it takes quite a bit to take out the elites. It definitely seems, or at least to me, it seems like the elites are a little bit harder to take out in Halo 4 than they have been in past Halo games. Yeah. So those plasma pistols are going to really come in handy. And even like the, what is it, the gold elites, I forget what class they are, but they can take 3 or 4 overcharged plasma bolts before their shields go down. So so make sure you keep...
Legendary, right?
Yes.
Okay.
So make sure you keep those plasma pistols handy as you kind of walk through the corridors. And then an AR or a Magnum will take out the grunts and jackals pretty quickly. Granted, if you get headshots, that's kind of the important part, is to get headshots on those guys.
Yeah, really. yeah, I usually get either a pistol or a DMR or a BR or whatever. I can, preferably one of those, because then you can just, at least on the heroic, you could take the grunts out and the jackals in one shot to feed them in the head. So
right.
It's always good to thin their ranks first before trying to take on the heavies.
Yeah. So definitely be on the lookout for those plasma pistols. And what's your opinion on the Needler? Because I find that sometimes the Needler is really helpful because it doesn't take as many needles to super combine than it has in the past. And if an elite's sitting still enough, you can actually take him out in two over or super combines. What have you messed around with the Needler at all?
Yeah, I really like it. The only thing, of course, is that it runs out of ammo really quickly.
Yeah.
You get at most 2 clips. But usually it's somewhere in between, it seems like. Because, you pick them up, they've already been shot a few times.
Right.
So, I think that's the only real downside. Of course, they don't work very well at range because the needles move too slow and they can easily dodge behind something. But whenever I find one, really, as long as it has enough ammo that it's worth switching out for my current weapon, I definitely pick it up. So, Of course, it's also useless against jackals with shields, in which case there are a whole lot of those in this game. So that's another thing to take into account.
Yeah, there's there's significantly more sniper jackals, but they're laid out through the missions in such a way where you're not overwhelmed. You usually get shot once or twice before you, or get shot at like once or twice before you figure out where the jackal is, and you can take them out pretty easily. You're never overwhelmed with jackal snipers. It's just there's a lot more of them, but they're evenly spread out throughout the entirety of the campaign.
Yeah. Except for Spartan Ops, there's a few of those where they're all
over. Oh, yeah, Sniper Alley sucks.
Oh, man.
I'm glad I don't have to play on that map again.
Yeah.
Or at least for the upcoming episodes, I don't have to play on that one again.
Good. Yeah, how are the upcoming episodes going to be done? Are they going to release those as DLC or what?
Yeah, so it's going to be free to download. It's going to be made available on the 21st of January, I believe. I'll have to go back and double check my facts on that. It's somewhere around there. But you get to download them for free. Season 1 as a whole is free, and you're going to have all new environments. So there's going to be some campaign maps that are going to be on there. So the trailer for episodes 6 through 10, I did notice that Vortex was one of the maps that was going to be incorporated into that cycle. So that's one thing that you can look forward to. And all the environments are going to be completely new for the rest of the season.
I see.
And it is free.
Oh, okay. So it's not going to be a pay-for-DLC or anything like that?
No. As long as you have Xbox Gold, it's free.
Okay, good.
Yep. So after you go through the rest of the ship and get outside... there's a floating BR there. Definitely pick that up and take out the jackals and the grunts from long range before you move in. There is a sniper jackal up on the very left in front of what looks like kind of giant rooms or crates. So there's just that one jackal sniper. And then further left, there's a jackal with a carbine. So just kind of take a look out, take a watch out for those two as you make your way over to the launch pad, which is all the way over to the left in the kind of orangish lit area. After you go and activate that, you have to go down and manually push the missile trigger into it so it can actually fire off. So it shoots off and it goes and kills one of the Covenant cruisers since they have all their shields down, not really expecting anything to be kind of firing their way.
Yeah, really.
So surprise.
Yeah, I probably thought the ship was derelict at that point.
Yeah. Shortly after that, you get scanned again with kind of the same high-intensity scan thing as it was before. And then the Forerunner planet that Cortana pointed out earlier just starts to open up. And she's like, now can we worry about the big metal Forerunner planet?
Yeah. yeah, she didn't seem to notice it so much before until they got outside and she's like, did I miss the whole orbiting around a Forerunner planet thing?
Yeah. So she mentioned that back in the control room.
Okay.
And then Chief was like, let's focus on one task at a time here. So
okay.
Yeah. So he got scanned and him being human and all and being the sense of the Forerunner opens up the doorway into Requiem. So you're trying to run back inside and kind of escape the gravity well, try to get to an escape pod. And you see some struggling Covenant along the way. You can choose to assassinate them or backsmack them or do whatever. But they're not going to turn around and fire at you. There are some holes that you can fall down into and basically, quote unquote, die from that thing. It's just make sure you kind of watch where you're going.
As the place like falling apart around you.
Yeah. So the entire ship is being basically pulled apart from this gravity well. Explosions are going on everywhere. Enemy grunts are kind of going crazy. You get to a certain part of the ship where the deterioration and the ripping apart has caught up with you, and you try to hold onto a rail, but you just can't. So you start falling through a bunch of different pieces of Ford and Dawn, lots of different debris. And you finally hit this one metal piece and you wide out until the next mission. And the next mission, you find yourself on Requiem. So that pretty much wraps up the first mission.
Yeah.
So as far as kind of tips and tricks goes, there's not too much to that you can do here in terms of like fast tracking or kind of skipping over a part. You just kind of have to go through everything and just watch, keep an eye out for plasma pistols and weapons to take out elites with, and then when you're outside, watch for that Jackal sniper. And that's really about it. Plasma grenades are really helpful on this too, because all the grunts drop them, and sometimes elites do, and it's if you can land a sticky on an elite, it just makes them that much easier to take out if you're running heroic or legendary. So,
definitely. Yeah, I was going to say that. Try to stick the elites.
Yeah. So
of course, it's risky because you got to get close enough that they can't dodge it. But
right.
It really saves a lot of time if you can get them down.
Yeah. So this one, for the most part, is just kind of play smart and just kind of watch where you're going, and you'll get through this one pretty easily.
Yeah. And don't you can play co-op campaign as well, right?
Yes, you can. And don't forget the first little terminal thing at the beginning of the level.
Yeah.
And also you get the achievement at the very end if you complete the mission, which is Dawn, of course. And it's 10 gamer score, so you can get a total of 30 gamer score on this mission.
Nice.
So that pretty much wraps up this mission. Personally, it was a fun mission, kind of a nice throwback to the Halo 2 style of gameplay. Not overly difficult, although there are kind of points in the mission where if you're playing solo legendary, it can kind of throw you for a loop for a little while, trying to figure out how to take out all the enemies. The two big choke points being the part in the control room and then the part right before you go outside in that kind of storage area.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, you have any last comments before we end this one?
No, I mean, it's a great first mission. It really whets your appetite for the action to come and kind of stokes the mystery a bit of what's going on with the Forerunner planet and, you know, what could be the whole purpose for being there. And
And why we're fighting the Covenant again.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, lots to learn along the way. So, yeah, pretty cool.
Yep. Welcome to our Spartan Ops coverage of the Halo 4 game. We did some campaign earlier with Fumo Jive. We did the Dawn mission, and now we're going to be talking about Spartan Ops. And for the whole Spartan Ops experience, I am actually going to be joined by someone that we had on the show before. He helped us out with the live-action machinima Forward Unto Dawn, and he is Chris, a.k.a. Sal, a.k.a. Halo Fan for Life. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me again.
Not a problem. We enjoyed you so much when you were on for Forward Unto Dawn that we wanted to have you back for Spartan Ops. So here you are.
Thank you.
And we've actually been kind of co-opting a document together, and it's
indeed
taken about a month and a half so far. It's almost done.
It's well worth it, though.
Yeah. I mean, not to belittle Halo Fan for Life over here. I've done most of the grunt work for this, and then he's kind of helped me along the way, kind of point out some things, mainly for the podcast that we're going to do now. So I thought I'd kind of help return the favor and have him on to help cover this. So we're going to talk about episode one for this episode, which is called Departure. So as you guys know, the first five episodes came with the game, and now we are going to be looking at each episode individually in part this part of kind of mini-series. Similar to what we're doing with the campaign. So let's go into the CGI scene first. This is our intro into Spartan Ops, and we first see Majestic Team flying out from Earth on a Pelican to go aboard Infinity for their missions all the way over in Requiem, far, far away from Earth. So we see Team Majestic being comprised of Paul DeMarco, Madsen, I don't know if we have a first name.
Not yet that I've heard.
Yeah. Hoya, Tedra Grant, and Gabriel Thorne. So Paul DeMarco is pretty much the fire team lead for Fireteam Majestic. And we'll see him quite a bit throughout the Spartan Ops experience. And Gabriel Thorne is going to be the other kind of big character for Fireteam Majestic. So these are the two characters that you guys want to really look out for when you're playing through Spartan Ops. So Team Majestic is kind of chatting about some stuff that's happened, some of the stuff that happened when the Didact was composing some of Earth, I believe.
Yeah, New Phoenix.
Yeah, New Phoenix, that was it. So they were talking about that, and Gabriel Thorne actually had some family there, so he was kind of emotionally affected by some of the stuff that happened from the Didact. So we'll learn later on kind of some motivation behind him wanting to go on this mission back to Requiem. So once Fireteam Majestic gets on board Infinity, they pile out of the Pelican, and they see a female Spartan on deck, and of course, DeMarco with, and we kind of pick up this demeanor as we see the initial conversations that they have on the Pelican, but kind of tries to hit on Sarah Palmer there for a little bit until she pretty much comes out and says that she's commander of all the Spartan fire teams. And at which point he pretty much snaps to and kind of straightens up there for a second. I thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah. She puts him in his place pretty quick.
Yeah. And it's more like she acknowledges what he's trying to do and then just kind of pulls out the superiority card and then he kind of feels a little embarrassed afterwards.
Yeah.
Which is kind of different from the Spartan 2s if you think about it. We're kind of digging into lore here. But if you look at the Spartan 2 program that Halsey put together, there was never a hierarchy of Spartans. They're always the same ranking. They're always put in teams, and then they had team leaders, but there was never this kind of military hierarchy where we have Sarah Palmer, who's actually a commander, and I don't know what the ranks of the other Spartans are, but it's definitely a lower rank. So they've really started to break out into actual
a rank structure.
Yeah. Where with the original Spartans, with Master Chief, they really didn't have that before. Yeah, they were all considered equal.
Petty officers there, and they were all really close in rank, so there wasn't as big of a differentiation.
Right. So that's kind of one important distinction to note about the Spartan Force, is they're a lot more human than the original Spartans were.
No, absolutely.
yeah. So after this whole kind of thing between DeMarco and Commander Palmer, she escorts them off the deck, and then she goes, pays a visit to Commander Lasky, who's on the bridge.
Now Captain Lasky.
Captain Lasky, yep. She goes to the command deck, and they make small talk. And do you want to kind of branch out here on what this may or may not mean?
Their talk, you mean?
Yeah, just kind of how they... Because you kind of really pointed me to it when we were playing, or when we were watching the cutscene.
Oh, kind of like their
relationship.
Professional nature?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's not at this point, but certainly later on, you know, they call each other by first name basis. Yeah, it definitely seems like there's more to it than just she being the commander of the Spartans and he being the captain of the Infinity. This early on, I don't know if we get a whole lot of that you see, but you get a little feeling, you know, of there being just, you know, just a little something off or extra,
right,
in the military relationship.
Well, and you've never really seen Spartans really talk.
Yeah.
Talk to humans or other Marines. Or it's other military in that regard.
It's not like the Spartan 2s are emotionally devoid. However, their military upbringing is, you know, much
a lot more structured.
Spartan 4s, right. So, you know, they really weren't given much opportunity to explore the emotional aspects of things. Whereas Spartan 4s, you know, clearly they were regular humans before and have been augmented, but they weren't kids when they were augmented. They were adults, so they've already had experiences in life, and you know, that's what I find kind of a little strange too. I don't want to go too far off topic here, but it was something that we had kind of learned early on through Bungie, that there really weren't supposed to be Spartans that were made from adult humans because of these kinds of social interactions that could inhibit their ability to, you know, make a full impact, you know, and really follow the letter of the military law. But, you know, obviously that decision's been changed. So now we're seeing what these new versions of Spartans can do, but also what their prior lives bring to their ability to be Spartans. So this kind of interaction that Palmer has with Lasky, and even in the campaign, the brief little smile, you know, that she said to, or the comments that she said to Master Chief, show you that we're dealing with a whole new brand of Spartans.
Right. So something to look out for. It kind of reminds me of what when Dr. Halsey was being interrogated at the beginning of the campaign.
Mm-hmm.
When the interrogator was asking about her abducting children, and then you brought up the social behaviors, and she comes back and says their records indicate that they operate efficiently.
Right. Yeah.
And that as kids, they're more subjective to indoctrination and more, like if they could handle the augmentations, that it made them that much better than if they were actual adults.
Mm-hmm.
Because I guess when you're at a child's age, you're still developing, and you can take take on those augmentations a lot easier, and then as you're developing, it kind of just merges with the rest of your body. I don't know. I'm not a biologist or anything.
Yeah, no, that's kind of the gist of it, because by the time you've reached adulthood, your body has grown as much as it's going to. So when you try to incorporate all these other things that they do, all the augmentations, it is a bit rougher, and it takes longer for them to adjust to that. Whereas the kids, you know, their bodies are continuing to develop, and it just becomes a natural progression for them. So,
right.
Yeah.
Cool. So on the command deck, we see pretty much them trying to figure out if it's time for the Spartans to really go out and take the fight to the Covenant on Requiem. Lasky comes out and tells Palmer that the Navy? Yeah. The Navy is pretty much ready for the Spartans to go out and start winning this battle on Requiem.
Mm-hmm.
And during this whole thing, Spartan Palmer actually mentions putting the Spartans through more war games. So we actually have now a direct tie between war games and the storyline of Halo 4.
Right.
So I think that's the first official time that we've seen multiplayer connected to the campaign.
That sounds about right to me too. And I like that she called it war games directly. Like, it wasn't like some other reference. It was a direct reference.
Yep. So that was good to see. Before they get to Requiem, a few minutes before, Spartan Palmer goes to the suiting room of the Spartans, get suited up. And this is kind of one of the cool parts of this whole first CGI scene, is seeing all the Spartans get their suits put on. So Spartan Palmer gives the pep talk and kind of describing the situation on Requiem, and has the witty one-liner at the end as Infinity comes out of slipspace and rams into a Covenant capital ship.
Yeah. Well, it's also one of our first glimpses of her kind of being, outside of the campaign itself, kind of
the boss.
A little cocky. You know, she's the boss, but she's a little cocky too. You know, that line that she says about ladies and other Spartans. I know that's rubbed some people the wrong way, but
that's very militaristic. So it's not. I don't find that really out of character for someone in her position.
Okay.
I don't know. It just seems like it fits really well.
Well, we're going to learn more about her, too, as we go along.
Right. So, but that pretty much ends the CGI portion of it, the first episode, which gives us, at least it gives us some groundwork into what's going to be going on through Spartan Ops. So it was, all in all, the CGI and just the facials and all the graphics that they put into this is really, really well done.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I agree there. It sets up the story real, real nice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it does move things along. There's a little bit of character development. It's not super long, but then it's not so short that you're wondering, you know, what's going on.
Yeah, well, almost all the CGI parts really aren't. They're about just the right length.
Yeah.
Not too long, not too short.
A little bit longer, but for the sake of them having a weekly episode, I can see them being this length, and I'm actually fine with that.
Mm-hmm.
Makes it easier for me too, because I'm doing those comic books for each one.
I'm just surprised that these were rendered in the same game engine. I mean, they're whenever you watch them, they're not in engine. They're actual movies that have been exported, or videos that you're watching. But still, to see that it's in the same engine,
mm-hmm.
It looks really, really good.
It does look really good. And I think I don't know if you've noticed this or not. If you take a look at Lasky and Palmer in the campaign versus them in Spartan Ops, I think that they went back, revisited, and redid them a little bit, because they look better, I think, in Spartan Ops.
I was about to say the same thing. They do look more fleshed out in Spartan Ops.
Yeah.
And that was probably just because they were actually able to go back and do it before the game.
Right.
Like, they probably had the campaign done before they had all these cutscenes for Spartan Ops done.
Right.
That'd be my guess.
Yeah, mine as well. And I like it. They look, you know, they look really well done and then pretty realistic.
Oh yeah, like there were certain parts where it's like, wow, I have to go back and remember. I'm this is actually computer generated. I'm not watching something that's real and with just CG overlays. This is all CG.
Right.
So they did a really good job. But enough of the CGI stuff and on to the gameplay of episode one. So each episode has 5 chapters, and jumping into the first one, it's pretty much just kind of an introduction mission into what Spartan Ops is going to be. Chapter one, of course, is called Land Grab. UNC Joint Operations UNSC Joint Operations began on Requiem as Infinity mass deploys Spartan Navy, Marine, Army, and Air Force units. So that is chapter one.
It's on the map Quarry.
Yep, on the map Quarry, and your objective is to neutralize Covenant forces. So what you're going to be doing for this first chapter is you land in a little cove that you can that with a big rock in front of you. If you played the campaign, it's what level is that?
Reclaimer?
I think so.
Yeah.
I'll look it up here in a second. But what you have is Covenant are in kind of the valley that's on the other side of this big rock, and you can pick in either direction. You can either go off to the right and flank Covenant that way. There'll be some foot troops like elites and jackals they can go through, or you can go directly to the left and kind of go for some vehicles to start off with. So,
and either way you choose is fine. It's not like one is right versus the other one. That's the good thing about this, is it leaves your options open to play the mission how you want to.
Right.
I suggest trying both ways and see which one works for you.
Mm-hmm. If you're one to, I will say if you go to the left, there is a Wraith you can pick up, which, in my opinion, since you have a Wraith, you can pretty much...
Well, certainly if you're playing by yourself and you're not playing in Spartan Ops matchmaking, that's a good way to go because it's a more powerful vehicle. I personally prefer to go to the right when I'm playing with others because, you know, you've got those three Warthogs at the beginning, a regular one, a Rocket Hog, and a Gosshog, and that Gosshog just tears things up. And, you know, I like getting somebody in that and gunning for me, or somebody driving and I'll be the gunner, and you can tear things up. And that's actually, in my opinion, better than the Wraith because it's more maneuverable, and has just as powerful of a shot or close enough. But again, that's the good thing about this is it gives you so many options. You can take a Warthog at the beginning. You can jack a Ghost. You can get the Wraith. You can go left or right. You can go right up the rock if you got a jetpack, or even jump up there. There's a lot of different things you can do. So that's the good thing about this.
Right. And there's quite a bit of this throughout some of the other levels too, where you can pick a path that you want to go. I know another map that's good for that is the Refuge. Whenever you go into that back room, you can usually pick which excerpt you want.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some other maps that when we get to them, we'll let you know where those are. So your first area that you're going to take out is a group of Covenant that's sitting up on top of that rock. I think there's an elite with a fuel rod.
Yeah.
That you need to take out. So once you take out that first area, you're going to be pushing deeper past some sniper towers. There's going to be a little...
core?
Yeah. Huh? Wait, what?
Oh, there's a power core?
Yeah. So there's by the sniper towers, there's some power cores they got to take out. And then what you're going to be doing is you go deeper into the quarry and take out the rest of the power cores and defeat the Covenant, and then you get pulled out for extraction. So this one is, it takes a little while to get through, but the objective is really simple, just kind of introducing you into the feel of Spartan Ops, more or less.
I think they did a really good job with it, too. You know, it's a straight-up mission. The map is large enough, you know, that you can get a good lay of the land if you're far enough away. You know, if you're, you know, you can, like I was talking before about the different paths you can take, there's some hills as you're heading down towards the quarry. You can head up high on the left and really get a good bird's-eye view of the rest of the map. So mm-hmm. again, you know, it gives you, you know, plenty of choices there. But yeah, it's a good mission to start with, certainly, and a good introduction into Spartan Ops.
Yeah. One thing that you mentioned while we were playing this and doing our notes that you wanted me to bring up was the part where you could assassinate the grunts.
Yes. Yes.
So as you're coming back out of the quarry part, back into that first area where you took out the coming on that big hill, there will be grunts actually running away from you. And if you go up and just assassinate them all, you get like, what, three or four, maybe more that you can get towards your assassination commendation.
Easily, yes. Yeah. Yes.
So there are some commendations that will actually be achievable in Spartan Ops and multiplayer. So I think only the enemy class types are specific to Spartan Ops, and then there's a few overlays. So like some vehicle ones are overlaid, the assassination ones are overlaid. Is there any other one that you can think of that really sticks out?
Yes. Well, let's see. I mean, again, Wheelman, killing with certain weapons is matchmaking as war games only.
Yeah, so that's war games only. That's
the one thing to keep in mind whenever you're playing Spartan Ops. It doesn't matter what you kill them with. Don't worry about trying to go for specific kinds of kills with weapons. But certainly the assassinations, there's a difference between war games and Spartan Ops. In war games, it's assassinations. In Spartan Ops, it's called backstab. It's still an assassination, but it's a different name for it. So that's just
really?
Yeah. Yeah. Huh.
Wonder if they intended to do that.
I don't know.
Interesting.
But yeah, that's something to bear in mind as well.
Okay. Second chapter is called Sniper Alley.
Before we get to that.
Okay.
Just quickly, I have the stats for one of my particular games I played on that mission. And just to make note, of course, you're only fighting Covenant. And this particular mission is very good for getting Imperial and Storm Grunts. And then from there, it starts to dwindle down. So if you're looking for a map or a mission, rather, to kill Grunts, this would be a good one. Grunts and then Elites from there. Okay.
Okay, cool. Yep. Do you have these for every chapter? Or?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Second chapter is Sniper Alley, like I just said. Covenant operations are reliant on several power stations around Requiem. This is on the map Sniper Alley, of course, and your objective is to disrupt the Covenant energy supply. So what's happening on here is Covenant have found a way to siphon off power from Requiem, and it's kind of powering some of their bases, and what you're going to be doing is going in and taking out their power supply. So you start off at the top of quote-unquote Sniper Alley, at the top of this kind of elongated bridge structure that comes out of a canyon. And your first objective is a series of shield doors they have to take out in order to get to this power core thing that they're pulling power off of. So you take out your first section of Covenant, and there's a couple of turrets on either side by the shield doors, and then after you do that, Spartan Miller will give you the waypoints on where all of the shield switches are. Right. So there's two of those that you have to do in order to get all the way down to the bottom of Sniper Alley. Once you get to the second shield door, though, you want to hold off turning off the shield and actually go over as far to the right as you can. What you can do is take out some of the sniper. Yeah, there's a couple of jackal snipers and other shield jackals that you can take out and kind of make it easier for you as you finally descend from the rest of the canyon.
Yes. And by the way, I posted the last chapter and this chapter specific tactics like that on my site. And there's a map on there that shows that and the path that I take. And I definitely go over that it's really important, especially if you're playing that on Legendary, to take those jackals out. Because if you hit the shield controls, not only are you going to have to contend with those snipers and the other jackals, but then you're going to also have to contend with more enemies as they drop. So why take on more than you have to? You know, take out those jackals first.
Right. And it's not like there's a lot of jackals. I think you can only take out about 6 or 7, but every little bit counts at this point.
Yes.
Especially if you're playing on Legendary.
Yes. Those snipers can be deadly on Legendary.
Yeah, they're not the ones that you really want to kind of go up against. Most of the time, they'll shoot you once as you're entering a new section, but once they see you after that, you're screwed.
Yeah. You could get hit and not even know where it came from.
Right. There's some other levels where there's more jackals up there, and you just poke your head out once, and you have about three or four of them sniping at you, and you're guaranteed to die at that point.
Yeah.
I remember a few times, and this isn't this episode, but I remember a few times where it's like I go around the corner and like, oh, I'm dead.
Right.
Well, thanks for warning me.
Yeah, there's no warning whatsoever.
Yeah. So after you take out that the jackals, activate the switch to take out the shield door. Oh, one thing I should have mentioned before, specifically on this map, it's important to note where the weapon crates are. There's some other maps, or most of the other maps, where you just kind of walk around and you can find where the weapon crates are for UNSC weapons. On this map, in particular, they are kind of strategically placed. So the first one is off to the right behind the turret for the first shield door. The second one is on top of the platform where you activate the switch. The next one is at the bottom of the bridge, the little elbow bridge, and it's in that back left corner right before you take the ramp that goes off.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can make your way all the way down throughout the rest of the canyon. There's another, I think another weapon crate in that small rocky area before you hit the final canyon down there.
That's right. There is.
And then in the last area, you'll actually get reinforcements delivered from Infinity. It's a rocket launcher, a sniper, and a railgun. And there's actually a weapon ammo crate down there as well. So you can use those to take out the elites, because there are quite a few elites. You can take out the grunts and the jackals with some of the weapons that you probably already brought down before, like DMRs, assault rifles, battle rifles, anything you start out with in your loadout. But those snipers, railguns, and rockets are going to be really useful in taking out all of those elites.
I concur.
Yep. So after you take out all the Covenant, you're going to mark the power core, and then you're going to run away so you don't get shot from Infinity, and then you're done with that mission.
Yes, yes.
Pretty straightforward for that one.
Right.
I have a feeling this is going to be our shortest episode, and then subsequent ones are going to be just longer and longer and longer.
Yeah.
I'm trying to keep this one to 30 minutes as much as possible, but we're about to hit the 30-minute mark.
Wow.
Which is going to be interesting for the future ones here.
Right. Well, again, on this one, this is another one that's good for grunts and jackals. Looking at my stats for a mission that I did, there were 41 storm grunts, 27 imperial grunts, 24 storm jackals, and then it really starts to dwindle from there. But, you know, just pointing that out, then, again, if you want to get grunts and jackal kills, this is a good mission for that.
Cool. Chapter 3, The Challenge. Spartan fire teams are engaging enemy forces across Requiem. Enemy forces are surprisingly resilient. This is on the map, the fortress, and the objective is to work in tandem with Fireteam Majestic. What you're doing here is you're going to two identical bases. If you play the campaign, these are bases from the mission Forerunner. They're the towers that get you up to the beam pylons whenever you go and deactivate the shields around the Didax quote-unquote tomb.
Right.
So the tower is very similar to that with the three bases around it. So you're being paired up with Fireteam Majestics, who's at another identical site. And when you first drop down, you realize, or you get a radio comm in from Fireteam Majestic saying that they haven't been able to contact Infinity. So your first order of business is to go around and figure out where the jammer is that's blocking your communications with Infinity. And of course, this is the first time in Spartan Ops that we see Promethean enemies, where we see crawlers around here. So what you're going to do is you're going to go deactivate the comm jammer, and then you'll reestablish communication with Infinity, and then they'll provide more kind of support from outer space. Once you do that, there are going to be some towers that you need to deactivate.
Mm-hmm.
and they're part of a comm array.
Let me suggest that before you go hitting those things, take out all the enemies, because otherwise you're going to have to contend with the enemies that you didn't kill, plus a whole bevy of more enemies once you activate things. So I think it's really important that you know, you take your time and kill those enemies off first.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yep. Sounds pretty solid to me as well. So there are at the three bases, there are the three kind of comm ports that you need to go and deactivate. And Spartan Palmer at this point is kind of making a game of this, is who can most quickly eliminate all the forces and take out all the comm towers. So, of course, being Fire Team Crimson, you're the best, and you finish the job before they do.
Which, of course, DeMarco is not very happy with.
Right. So, well, he'll have his chance later, maybe. We'll see. So, after you get all of the comm arrays, clean up the rest of the Prometheans, and you will receive some, I think, a single rocket launcher supply drop.
Yeah,
and that's in the from where you initially spawned. That's going to be over to your left.
That's correct.
So,
on the ground.
Yep, on the ground. Which, I guess most of the rest of the enemies are going to be on the ground anyway. There's not many up on that final tower.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so after you get all the comm rays and take all the Prometheans, you are set. So, what stats we got for this one?
This one actually is, it's all crawlers and, watchers. It's, mostly, alpha crawlers, which I had at 28 kills, 26 kills on watchers, and then 24 regular crawlers. The ones that, not just with this mission, but any other mission, the crawler that seems to be the hardest to come across is the sniper crawler. And in here, there were
only... That's probably a good reason.
Well, yeah.
It's a pain to fight. If you
want to get that commendation up, then it's going to be tough. So right here is our first opportunity to see any version of the crawlers and watchers. So certainly if you want to work on those, this is a good mission for that, except for the fact that there's not a whole lot of sniper crawlers.
Right.
But they're each in the mid-20s and higher, with the exception of the sniper ones. So it's good. You know, it's good. It's a fairly easy mission. Pretty straightforward. I personally like to stay up high on the main tower and only jump down when I need to.
Right, and it's even more helpful when you have more people to play with.
Oh, absolutely.
Spartan Ops is definitely a cooperative experience.
I think so. And it's just fun that way, too, I think.
Yeah, although it is a nice challenge to see if you can do it on your own.
Certainly.
Chapter 4 is Sacred. Infinity Science requests a Spartan fire team scout a suspicious structure. Caution advised. This is on the map The Refuge, and the objective is to explore the facility. So what you're doing as Fire Team Crimson is going in and checking out the area, making sure it's all safe before science teams go in. And of course, since you're going in and you're playing it, there's obviously something that's going to go on. So... for the storyline part of this, Spartan Palmer is really impressed with how you're performing, so she is sending you off on her little special assignments. So this is kind of your first special one, since you kind of outdid Fireteam Majestic. So right now, you're special.
Feels good to be special.
Indeed it does. So the first thing that you're going to see in this first map is there's pretty much no one there. So there is... at first it seems all hunky-dory, it's all going to be fine and everything, but Spartan Miller radios in and says that there are some power fluctuations, which means there's been some activity here recently. So your first waypoint is to the very, very back of the facility.
Of course.
Of course, you have to make the long trek in.
It could never be near the front where you're first delivered at. No, it's got to be all the way in the back.
All the way back there. I think just about every time you play on this map, it's all the way on the other side of the map, yeah, where you spawn.
It is.
Every single time. So what you're doing is you go back and you find the star map and you end up activating it and downloading it or uploading it to Infinity, and they do what they want with it. And then as soon as you activate it, you get well, actually, just before you activate it, there's a couple of crawlers that pop up. And then right after you activate it, there's more crawlers that pop up.
Mm-hmm.
So you get the information from the star map, and then Spartan Palmer is pretty much satisfied with it. So they're trying to get you out for extraction. But when you try to exit that little back room, guess what's standing in your way? Oh, a nice little Promethean knight.
Mm-hmm. And this is your first opportunity to meet against them in Spartan Ops. Yeah.
So I think 353 did a really good job with kind of introducing you to Spartan Ops, because the first one we had the Covenant, and just it was very wide open, and the tactics and the objectives were very straightforward. The second one...
They were also similar to what we've already played through in other Halo games, so that familiarity makes it easy for you to kind of adjust to Spartan Ops.
Right. The second one was just kind of a continuation of that, kind of giving you a feel for a different kind of environment. And then chapter three was the introduction of Prometheans in general. And then chapter four was the introduction of Promethean knights, and so on and so forth. So going back to what actually happens in chapter four, you fight your way through a bunch of Prometheans. There's plenty of there waves that come up. I want to say there's at least maybe 10, 12 knights by the time you're done fighting them all. Possibly more. Yep,
12.
So
my stats, 12.
You don't have to kill all of them off to begin with, but once you try to get to the entrance where you first came in, the doors close, stuff starts to move around a little bit, and Palmer's like, where'd their exit go? And Miller's like, I don't know, don't play me, I didn't do anything. So he finally figures out where the switch is to open their exit up. So you have to go around, go to the switch, which is kind of booby-trapped, because once you get there, a whole other set of Prometheans spawn, including a knight. And I think that knight is a scattershot knight. So
yes. You
got to watch out what you're doing before you go activate that switch.
Absolutely. Now, the good thing is the enemies that you fight previous to that, there is a knight that has an incineration cannon. So if you take him out,
yes,
grab his incineration cannon, then when you go to activate that switch, it actually comes. It's pretty easy then, as long as you stay far enough away. And that's a key piece of information. If you got that incineration cannon, make sure you're not too close when you hit the enemies.
Oh, yes.
Those bouncing balls of fury, or whatever you want to call them, can come back to hit you and bite you in the ass, and you'll die.
Yep. I've done that in just war games.
Yeah.
I think everyone's probably done that at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But that knight, just to note, is the one of the knights that spawn right by the door that you're supposed to go exit through. So if you don't get to that part before the knight moves around a lot, then it's going to take a little bit to figure out which knight has the incineration cannon. But you can also tell by kind of how their back is styled. And when we do our video walkthrough, we'll show you what that looks like as well.
Right.
But once you go activate the switch, the door opens up, and then there's another set of knights and crawlers that spawn inside that door area. I think there's another two, maybe three knights, and they will actually spawn watchers. So right. They'll go around and revive all their buddies.
So it's very key to take those watchers out.
Exactly.
I say that really for any part of Spartan Ops and campaign as well.
Well, it seems to be a lot.
But with them being able to revive the enemies, that can be a problem.
Yeah, and it seems to be, at least to me, it seems to be a lot more important in Spartan Ops than campaign to really take out those watchers. Mm-hmm. Just because the sheer numbers of enemies, I think, is greater in Spartan Ops than it was in the campaign.
Absolutely.
And that's for a reason.
Right.
So once you take out all the Prometheans, and it's safe for the scientists to come in, you can go to your evac point. So give us the stats on this one.
This one, again, it's all Prometheans. And really, the only things that are good for this is regular crawlers and alpha crawlers. It is your first opportunity to meet up against knights, but the total of them is 12, so it's not really a ton. So I would suggest not using this mission if you want to go for knights. It's really more just a crawler thing.
Okay, last chapter for this episode is chapter 5, which is Core. Covenant archaeological teams operating on Requiem are searching for something. Infinity Command wants to know what. Map is Cauldron, and your objective is to interrupt the Covenant dig. This is the map that was played everywhere before Halo 4 came out. This was played at E3, this was played at PAX, this was played at RTX, I think.
Mm.
So this was the poster child for Spartan Ops.
And it was a good one to do it.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun to play.
Let me add in here. I know you have this towards the end in your notes, but if you don't mind me bringing it up quickly.
Okay.
This is also the mission that Megablocks, a licensor of Halo toys, they played as well, this particular mission. And because of that, they based one of their building block sets for Halo off of that mission. And it's called Cauldron Clash, and it's going to be coming out here, I believe, within the month. So that's something to look forward to if you're into building toys. Believe me, the Mega Bloks Halo stuff is fantastic. And that set includes a Promethean, two crawlers, a Promethean, a Watcher, which actually does fit into the Promethean's back, the Knight, that is. And it has a Spartan and a Marine as well. So it's a really cool set that's based off this mission. And it's something to look into, even if you're not necessarily a building toy person, but you want something to have visually outside of the game that's Spartan Ops, this is a set for you.
That's really cool. The only downside to those sets, like Mega Bloks and Legos, and there's other kind of like the brick things out there, is that they're just so expensive when you go to buy them all. Like, I looked at the one that they had for Forward Unto Dawn, I believe.
Oh, well, now that's a special case, man. That's that's their biggest Halo set to date.
Right. But then there's some of their other sets, and it's just, I would want them all as a Halo fan, but to get them all, it would be upwards of $2,000.
Yeah, well, that's why you only, you know, buy a few here and there, see if you really like them. Mega Bloks, their quality is right there with Lego, and they are less expensive than Lego. Personally, I think their minifigures completely blow Lego out of the water because of their articulation, their sculpt, their detail. And again, comparatively in price, they are less than Lego in just about every instance. That Forward Unto Dawn set that you're talking about, though, like I said, that is an exception, but it is an exceptional set too, though. You can see a review on my site. Let me plug that.
Oh, yeah.
Getting back to the mission.
This is the one for, I mean, if you've probably seen, you probably saw this before you even played it, but this is the mission where you're going up against Covenant. You have to go across the bridge to, and you're trying to interrupt their dig wherever they're doing, because it's just right on the other side of this bridge in kind of a off cove area. So you start spawning off in one of the lava flow areas. You run down, take out some grunts and some elites, and then you have to activate the power cord so you can activate the switches to open the doors on the bridge. And then you go through, take out all the Covenant there. And at that point, Infinity radios in. It's like they're really putting up a real fight here. They're obviously wanting to defend whatever they're digging for, which mm-hmm. means that, of course, you're interested, and your job is to make sure that you get whatever they're digging for first.
Right.
In true UNSC fashion. So after you fight your way through the doors, there's going to be there's a shield that you have to hit a switch for to deactivate and get into the dig site. Once you do that, you get you get Prometheans. I thought you were about to say something. This was
no, 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 no. Okay. Just that. Uh-oh, now you got to do Prometheans.
So you get to do Prometheans. So this is building on kind of what we're doing before in the progressional state. This is the part where we see now you're going to be fighting Covenant and Prometheans in the same environment. And I still don't get this line, because we saw it in the campaign, but whenever we see the Prometheans pop up, Spartan Palmer comes on the radio and says, "Oh, there's Prometheans working with Covenant? That's not good." And it's like they were doing that before you even left Requiem in the first place.
Yeah.
It's like, what did you expect things to change over 6 months? Really?
I don't know.
Sorry,
I
found that one a little off.
Yeah, it is. I guess you could say that the what happened in the campaign, I mean, that happened very quickly. So there really wasn't a whole lot of time to ascertain that was going to be a situation that would continue. Of course, you know, we assume that, but if you look at it from an in-game character perspective, maybe they didn't assume that that was going to continue, or, you know, who knows, you know, once the Didact is gone, maybe things would change, who knows. But anyways, I agree with you, though. Yeah, it was kind of weird, like, you didn't know that already?
Yeah. So, once you defeat all the Prometheans, you go up, hit a switch, and this thing magically kind of appears. Some mysterious Promethean or Forerunner black box.
Yep.
So, once that pops up, there's a few more Prometheans that spawn out of the ground that you have to hold off against until your Pelican comes in to get you evac'd out of the site. One other thing to note on this chapter is the Rooster Teeth Easter egg.
Yeah, I was going to say that if you didn't.
Yeah. So once you get to the bridge, right after you activate the power cord to activate the switches, look over the bridge opposite of where you first came up it, and you'll see a little box. You want to shoot
down the lava, too.
Yeah, it's so down by the lava. You don't want to jump down there. You want to stay up on the bridge.
Yeah.
You will die. But shoot that box with anything. As long as you get it hit on it, then it'll activate it. And you'll hear the little opening sound bit. Yeah, the down, 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 down. That goes with all their RVB episodes. So once you hear that noise, you know the egg has been activated. And the egg on this one is when you hear Spartan Palmer, like after you get past the doors, you hear Spartan Palmer call into Castle Base. And instead of Castle Base, you hear Caboose. And he's like, well, the regular radio guy isn't here right now.
Yeah, it's funny.
And it happens twice.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe three times. I think it's just twice, though. Once after you get past the bridge doors, and then once when you're at the very end after you have the artifact where she's trying to radio in to Castle Base to get them an evac.
Right.
So, stats.
Okay, again, this one's good for crawlers, regular crawlers, 28 kills there. And again, a good one for grunts, 19 storm grunts, 15 imperial grunts, and then everything else is kind of small numbers for. So get your crawlers and your grunts.
Cool. For achievements for this episode of Spartan Ops, this one is for all five chapters. There are some ones that are going to be chapter specific, but for this one, it's all chapters. And the achievement for this one is called A Legendary Episode for 40 Gamer Score. And what you have to do, complete all chapters in episode one on Legendary. That can be solo or it can be co-op. It doesn't matter. As long as you get them all done on Legendary, you will get this achievement.
Right. It's pretty easy to do co-op.
So oh, yeah.
That's something I definitely would suggest. Of course, if you're looking for a challenge, then by all means, go for it solo.
Indeed. All right. That pretty much covers episode one of Spartan Ops. Any final remarks before we wrap this one up?
No, other than the fact that I am completely happy with Spartan Ops. I'm glad 343 made it. You know, I was going to
miss... Is this the part where you reference Walking Dead?
What's that?
Is this the part where you reference Walking Dead being an episodic thing?
Well, it wasn't, but now that you mention it... yeah. What POD Duststorm is talking about here is the fact that Walking Dead won Game of the Year, and it's considered an episodic game. And it's actually good that they won. So Halo 4 wasn't up for it. We're talking about the VGAs in specific here.
Right.
Halo 4 wasn't up for Game of the Year. So for The Walking Dead to win and it being an episodic game, it bears something very good for Spartan Ops, because Spartan Ops, while not the exact same as Walking Dead, is considered an episodic game. And with Walking Dead winning, it gives Spartan Ops some legs. It gives it an opportunity to say, hey, you know, people want this kind of gaming. People like to have new content every week. I know Walking Dead is maybe, I think it's once a month their episodes are. But here with Spartan Ops, every week having a mission, even with the break that we're in now between episode 5 and episode 6, still, it was great to have continuing episodes with not only the CG stuff, but then having 5 missions a week to work on. I used to get them, and I've been getting them done in one day, but still, they are, the replayability for these, at least for me, is high. I enjoy going in and playing these missions over and over again. Of course, I also like to work on commendations. So this is something that, you know, I can do if I don't have any friends on in particular. It's something I can pop into real quick and do a mission in 5 minutes to up to 10 minutes, depending on what mission I choose. And just have a, you know, just have a blast. You don't have to worry about playing against people. So it's not like you have to try as hard. You know, it's more, this is, I think, is a more of a fun factor to it. Not that it's not fun playing war games, mind you, but, you know, I think you get what I mean. It's a, yeah. It's a different feeling. So, yeah, it's a good thing that that other game won, and it gives them the opportunity for Spartan Ops to continue past the 10 episodes that are already drawn up for. And I certainly hope that we get that, because for me, 10 episodes just isn't going to be enough. I really want
to... Well, they've pretty much already said that they're doing a second season.
Yeah.
David Ellis said that at some point. It's a matter of whether or not they're going to do more seasons afterward, which, I mean, I'm really enjoying it. I would, and I've said this before, I'd like to see a little more character development on Sarah Palmer.
Sure.
See
her on the battlefield, damn it.
And well, it looks like from the trailer that we got, we may see it.
Hopefully.
Yeah, exactly. So by the time we have all of these episodes done, the next set of episodes will be at episodes 6 and through 10.
Mm-hmm.
So the turnaround time on those will probably be a little bit quicker than 2 months after the game came out.
Right. Well, this is a good opportunity, though, because it gives us the chance to go over this. It'll be back fresh on people's minds, and
yep.
We're working our way right up to episode 6 again.
So this will be good. One last thing before we go, guys, is that Halo Fan for Life is actually kind of doing this in conjunction with our podcast. So we're kind of in, well, it's not an official agreement, but we're kind of in this agreement where
it's
we're
official enough to me.
We're doing the podcast, and then he's going to be doing companion articles, however you want to define that.
Yeah, I call them, they're called mission by missions. Or mission by mission, and it's just that. The articles that I post are mission specific. I actually have the first one up and the second one, but I think I might be updating those with a little bit more information. But those articles go into greater detail about what enemies you'll face, where you'll face them, where you'll find weapons, where to camp at on the maps. Because, yes, camping is a legitimate strategy, and certainly in Spartan Ops, you definitely want to do that for some reason.
Yep.
So, you know, listen to the podcast. Come and check out my site for the HaloFanForLife.com for my take on Spartan Ops, some tactics, and so on. There's some good graphics here. The maps are there, so you can view the maps. I actually have an arrowed line, like a dashed line, that shows the paths that I normally take, so you can get an idea. Mind you, you don't have to take those paths. It's just something that I do, and you might find that you might like the same kind of play style that I go through on these missions. So, and then after that, of course, come back to Podtacular and check out the video walkthrough. So you really get a well-rounded base for Spartan Ops via the podcasts, the articles, and then the video walkthroughs.
Indeed. Are there heat maps for Spartan Ops, like overheads?
There's overheads, yes. Actually, and this is something I wanted to mention earlier. I don't normally plug other kinds of things, but in this one instance, I want to. Prima Games came out with a strategy guide for Halo 4, and I picked it up. Now, I got mine for like $20 off of Amazon during a sale. I didn't get it right away. I got this actually maybe a couple weeks ago. I have to tell you, this by far is the best guide I've ever gotten. And the cool thing is, when you buy this guide, wherever you get it from, it comes with 10 cards that show the initial 10 War Games maps. And the good thing is they're coded, so you could use a grease pencil on them if you wanted to write on them, and it's got all the callouts. But as far as
I actually have a set of those from MLG Dallas.
There you go. Now, as far as how it pertains to Spartan Ops, though, you know, everything's in the book. But the good thing is this also comes with a code. This book comes with a code that you can go to Prima Games, and you enter that code, and it gives you then direct access to the book in digital form. And it's no extra cost.
I may be buying this tonight then.
Have to buy it, dude. You have to buy it.
Did they do that for the previous Halo games?
I don't believe so. Not like this. So because of that, they give you the whole book digitally. Now you've got all the Spartan Ops maps that you can download for yourself and take a look at them from overhead and decide, you know, as you play them, you can say, well, you know, this might be a good place to go, or this is where I went and this is where I fought that, you know. And that's what I put in my articles. I actually take their maps. I add some additional graphics to it. Like I said, again, the path that I take, camping spots that work for me, why I go to these positions and so on. And I give notations of that during my articles. So
I'm sold.
Oh, yeah. hold on a second. This book goes normally for $30. So I would say look on Amazon and other places, and you could find it for cheaper. I got it for $20. It's completely worth it. The book itself, even if it didn't have this other stuff, is worth it. But because you can get this digitally, it's the same book digitally, completely worth it. It's awesome. So again, I don't normally plug other things, but this, absolutely. Spartan Ops, it works great for War Games, campaign. It's got everything you want. And as far as it pertains to what we're doing here, man, you can't go wrong.
Sounds great. Hello everyone, welcome back to Pod Tackler. We are doing our multiplayer coverage now. We're going to be taking a look at one of the multiplayer maps, and the first one we're going to take a look at is Complex. And with me I have my good friend Jack Fire Dragon, who's actually in the room with me. He's visiting here for a while over in the States. Some of our longtime podcast listeners will know who he is. For some of you newer ones, he and I have gone through some funny antics with Machinima and stuff, but he's back covering our first map, so welcome back to the podcast, Jack.
Yeah, it's about time. I mean, it's what, being at 30?
It's been a while. What? I think the last one was
292.
Was it?
Yeah, oh, wait. Well, I was technically present for 300. You did give me a mention because I was in the chat feed.
Ah.
But that wasn't really there. But I think 292 was the last one. And then
my last big one was 287 with Green Skull.
That was a big one.
That was the one where we announced the railgun.
Yeah, and that was like 25,000 now?
No, that one hit over 30,000.
Awesome.
Yeah.
But obviously,
but then,
Halo Council came along, blew that out of the water.
Yeah, Halo Council came and trumped you guys.
Well, it's still second best, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. Still, we are here to talk. Well, and then Kevin Franklin broke that record for you. So he got over 32.
Oh, well, that's fine. Bronze medal.
That's Kevin Franklin, so.
Yeah.
I mean, go figure, right?
Hey, why don't you get Elijah Wood on? Then you can break that record.
Yeah, my dreams. So we're going to be talking about Complex. What we're going to be doing for the multiplayer maps here, guys, is go through some general tips, cover some of the basic weapon loadouts, some objective markers like King of the Hill or Capture the Flag, whatever is kind of the popular game type or whatever matchmaking playlist these maps are showing up in. So first off, let's kind of cover the basics for Complex. We have a blue team that spawns off in the open area.
Yep.
Or relatively open area, so to speak. And then we have the red team that spawns in the closed off base area, which is actually the one that's closest by the cliff, in the warehouse.
Mm-hmm.
So, for Slayer and Capture the Flag and just about every other game type other than, I think, Flood, those are where your two primary teams are going to spawn. And then for, four team games, you have your green spawn, which is over on the cliff side, and then you have your yellow spawn, which is over in the factory side. This map is mostly played for Slayer, Capture the Flag, and Oddball, and it was played for King of the Hill when we had the King of the Hill playlist. And it also comes in play with Regicide every now and then as well. So those are pretty much all the game types. Of course, every map has default settings for every game type. Oh, actually, another one is Flood.
Oh, Flood. Well, you mentioned Flood at the start, didn't you? Yeah, so.
Nah.
You said the spawns are there apart from Flood, so.
Oh,
so
yes.
You mentioned Flood.
Well, I'm saying it's in the Flood playlist as well. It's actually probably one of the more played maps for Flood.
Well, yes, and of course they had the patch, the whole cheeky jump behind the little base area by Red Base.
Well, that was more for Oddball.
That was there, but Flood was used quite a bit as well, because you get in there, obviously the Flood just have to line up for you. Yeah.
So what Jack's getting at here is there was a bug with the map complex, and that the where the red spawn is in the warehouse, you could actually get up over one of the doors, and the barrier for the textures wasn't put in the final version, so they actually, in matchmaking, was able to patch it by putting a kill barrier there, a hard kill barrier, but those maps that they patched up in matchmaking actually don't reflect the maps on the disc. So in custom games, anything that they fix post-launch is still there, and if you want the patched maps, you basically have to save them from your temporary history whenever you play them in matchmaking.
So abuse that all you want.
Or don't abuse it and actually download the right file.
Either way works.
Either way works, I guess. Yes. So let's talk about some tactics for a Slayer. So one of the big control points for this map is the place that's on or in and around Top Jerk. If you have the Prima guy, there's actually really nice cards that come with the guy that you can go through, and they have a bunch of callouts that Prima came up with. You'll hear some other people probably come up with their own callouts, like Elbow, or I call the computer room server room, and then the warehouse, some other things sometimes.
A lot of what people like to do is like gold and green. So you just have the whole red bases and you have blue bases, and so factory. I think that's gold. So you have gold one, gold two.
So that's where yellow spawn is.
Yeah. So I mean, you do that, and so I think probably Top Jerk would actually be considered G3.
Green. Yep.
So that'd be G3, as that's the top floor. The middle section's G2, and the bottom with run under is G1.
Right. But we're gonna use the callouts that are on the Prima guides for now. So there's some interesting ones on here. I didn't know this one until I looked at the cards a minute ago, but the room that's adjacent to the computer room, the one that connects that kind of outer bridge loop from the factory area and the Top Jerk, is actually called the kitchen. I did not know that before.
You're tempting me to make the joke. Don't make me make the joke.
You can make
joke.
It if you want.
I don't want
to
make it.
I'm not pressuring you to do it.
I think you'll lose some viewers if I do.
Another control point that's kind of a mini control point compared to Chop Jerk is Mini Jerk. So it's one of those places that you can probably mount an effective resistance against Top Jerk and take some people out from over there.
I wouldn't suggest it.
You wouldn't think so?
No, because the fact is, you can, if you do a perfect jetpack up there, you can get up to Mini Jerk from the back of Red Spawn, but the only other way to do that is via either ledge or bridge. And you're completely open to Top Jerk the whole time, so you're not getting up there without putting some suppressive fire on Top Jerk anyway.
All right.
So it's only a place really to rain down spawns on rain down fire on Red Base.
Okay.
Someone captured the flag, that would be a good place to get.
Right. Okay. But yeah, like I was going to say, Ledge was the other one as well.
Yeah.
That's actually indicated by Dirt Path and the guide. But the nice thing about that area, it's darker, so it's not as easily seen from Top Jerk.
A lot of, I would say, campers like to hide around the ledge to the bottom entrance to Factory.
A lot of camo campers, too.
Well, camo isn't as bad as people think. It really isn't.
It's not.
Because you can actually almost pinpoint the exact one, because one of the things does actually relate to where they are, and you can almost pinpoint, it's almost usually the center one. It's usually the center one.
That's when camo isn't bugged, though.
That's true, but for example, I would say hologram is far more effective than camo, because you are going to completely give away your position. If they have camo, you can start moving or crouch around, and they're not going to know where you are. But hologram, you'll give away your position straight away, because if you don't know, it's the hologram.
Right.
Hologram's much more effective than camo.
Yeah. And hologram's one of those tricky ones. It's like, if you know how to use it, you can use it kind of effectively, because there was actually a game I played the other day where I got tricked by a hologram on Haven, and I fell flat on my face for that.
The way to use hologram is basically to send it in the complete opposite direction and run exactly at the same time. So it's basically a 50-50 chance. They pick one or the other. If they pick you, bad luck. If they don't pick you, you've got first two shots on them, and you should kill them. That's the idea.
Well, a couple of other things, too, is like if you're standing in a multi-tiered level, and if you're standing still and you see someone that's running above you, and if you shoot out a hologram, that's the only dot that they see. They don't see your other dot when you're moving around. So that's...
It's true, but it only works well right at the start, because as soon as someone realizes you've got hologram, they're looking out for it straight away.
Yeah, but at that time, they're probably already on you, and it's too late.
Yeah.
So there are very specific uses, I think, for hologram.
I would say it's more for finding out where the enemy team is, sending it out so that you know where to shoot at next.
And I think for camo, you have to actually have a lot of other things around you so that they don't exactly know where you are.
It works best when you're working in a tandem with camo. Because then, you know, you have someone run out, and they think, oh, okay, that's the camo guy. Wait, no, he's not. There's the other camo guy. You get double teamed.
Right.
That's the best time to use it.
Yep. Let's talk about some weapon spawns.
Yep.
So, default weapon spawns is a sniper in the back of both bases. We have a scatter shot that's over on the factory side. We have energy sword that's in the middle in the courtyard.
I would say definitely energy sword over scattershot. Scattershot is it's almost useless unless you're prepared to just stay in the factory the whole time. It's near enough useless. At least with energy sword, you can go straight up, because I mean, I personally, when I get the sniper from Red Blaze base, go straight up the lift.
Right.
So
almost everyone runs up that lift.
Well, it's not the best thing to do. You don't want to do that at all. The best thing to do when you get red snipers is actually come around the back and rain fire down, because their sniper's going to come down back street or dirt path, as it's said here. But I call it back street.
Right.
But that's...
You and your MLG callouts.
Well, that's not an MLG callout. That's just a callout I give, because this map isn't MLG at all.
No, it's...
And
you could,
this map, unless you were to cut off a lot of areas, could not be MLG at all.
It's just too big.
That's one thing, but it's just not symmetrical enough. And you need a symmetrical map.
Right.
So you'd have to fix the spawns completely. And cut off that whole back area by cliff. I mean, and then what's the point? You might as well just remake the map in something, a 412 map. So, I mean, there's no point then. I would say for sniper, unless you're very, very quick and you've got the extra sprint, I can't remember what that perk is. The perk where you have unlimited sprint.
I know what you're talking about. But, I think it's called mobility.
Okay. So unless you got that and you can go straight into factory, and you need to be good at... I hate using this term because it's a completely COD term, but quick scoping. I know it's a Halo term as well, but when someone says quick scoping, you're mostly talking about COD. But you have to be very good at, you know, scoping in quickly and getting a headshot.
Yeah.
And be prepared to get double teamed.
Actually, two body shots isn't that hard either.
Well, it's not, but the two body shots, you know, you only get 8 bullets, you know, so it's a bit of a waste. Most of the time when I body shot someone, I'm pulling out my DMR or BR. But on this map, DMR has to be DMR.
Right.
But for sniper, blue has a definite advantage.
All right. There's also a set of plasma grenades on top of red. Mm-hmm. And I'm assuming there's a set of plasma over on blue side. I just don't know where they are.
On top of the base. There. On top of warehouse.
Okay, so it's on top of the...
warehouse, yeah. It's just at the cliff there.
Or...
they're just at the edge, facing out towards...
I'm sorry, top red jerk. Side.
Oh, so sorry. Our red side's up here. Up there.
Okay, so that's on top of the garage.
Yeah.
Got it.
So I got confused with it. Yeah, they're both on their two, like, same areas over there.
And then there's frag grenades in the... what's this called?
It's in
the mini jerk. Inside.
Yeah, it's
inside the lift area.
Inside there and inside passageway to top jerk.
Right.
I really just want to call it G2. Oh, sorry, that'll be green 2.
Okay, that's the... that's the kitchen.
Well...
on here.
I shouldn't really call it green 2, because that's G1 and G2, that would be pink, so they call that pink or purple.
Oh, okay.
Because you wouldn't call by team names, you go P and G.
Alright, fair enough. So, those are all the initial ordnance. There's also some random ordnance out there. One of them has a railgun, and that's on the center bridge, or the center street. And then there's a Spartan laser that's over on the cliff side of the map, over by the computer room.
But they're not the big ones. The big ones are rockets.
Right, so there's rockets in front of...
There's rockets three places on the map, I believe.
Yeah, there's... is it three?
Well, there's I know at least three. There's rockets down the back passageway to the red base.
There's a set of three rockets here on this path on blue side or red side.
Well, there's rockets that spawn on top of the blue helipad.
There's another one right here.
There's one in front of blue, yes. Yeah,
there's three.
It's just on the link to purple or top jerk. It's on the bottom there. There's one at the back of, when you run right at Red Base towards, the dirt path by Red Base.
Yeah. So there's actually, three random rocket drops on each side.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
snipers are just...
yeah, there's snipers on the other
all
one.
All over the map.
And there's another set, one of the sniper spawns is also a dual sniper rocket on each side.
It's inside the...
in here.
It's inside there, yeah.
Yeah, it's inside the mini jerk for one.
One is sniper... if it drops again, it's rockets, and if it drops again, sniper.
Sniper, right. And then there's one of them that's a mix that has a shotgun as well.
That's the shotgun sniper down at the bottom of the factory.
In the factory, right. So those are your random ordnance drops. There's also a couple of random frag drops.
Yeah.
One
is inside Top Jerk, the second level of Top Jerk.
No, that's the initial.
It's also a random drop as well.
Okay.
I remember picking it up in the middle of the game I was playing today.
All right. Cool. For hills on the map, first one is, well, which one would you say would be, I forget what the first hill is.
First hill is always a central one, so it's...
is it factory?
Yes, it is. It's a central level factory.
Yeah, so the first hill is in factory, and then...
and that's the one you want to control. That's when you want to get milk the time out of that one. That's the one you need to get. Because the other ones are just so open. Apart from maybe the top of Red Base.
And the one on top of Factory is kind of closed off. It's open in some regards, but you can get a good amount of time off.
Well, yeah, so top Factory and top Red Base, the two hills you need to milk. The rest of them just scrap time.
Yeah. But just to locate those, top helipad is a second one compared... and we're going to just call Factory the first one because it's always the one that spawns. And then mm-hmm. there's six other ones on the map. Top helipad, top of the warehouse... top jerk. There's one on top of the mini jerk. There's one inside the kitchen. One on top of the garage. And then...
I think you've done seven.
One in the pit over here in the front yard. There is one there as well.
That's eight then. There's eight.
Yeah, so I guess there's eight on this one.
There's eight.
So, a total of eight hills on this map. And then for oddball spawns, there's...
it's
two over in the factory.
Yeah.
Well, so if the ball goes off the map, then it does respawn. But there's two in the factory. There's an additional five or six on the outer edge. There's one on top of the garage.
Mm-hmm.
There's one on top of the warehouse.
On helipad.
One on top of the helipad. One that's over here in the dirt path on the ledge.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple over here on the ridge side over by the beach in the front yard, according to the call-outs on here.
But for help for Oddball, because we are supposed to be giving help as well.
Yeah.
everyone wants to take it to Warehouse. Now, I'm fine with that.
Since the patch?
Well, yeah, since the patch, but I'm this is post-patch. You gotta remember, though, if you lose it in Warehouse, the team has the other team, you give them a perfect setup in Warehouse. That's you gotta remember. So I would never hold it in Warehouse. I would hold it around top, the jerk area. The top jerk area. That's the best place, because you can drop down three levels. And you gotta remember, also with this, the ball throwing, you can throw it from top jerk all the way. I have tried it all the way to red dirt path.
All right.
And that, and you got straight getaway to the factory.
That's a pretty big jump.
it's a huge though, but you can make it because you can bounce it off the top of mini jerk.
All right. Let's go back to Slayer. I don't think we covered Slayer quite enough. Control points.
Well,
so
Slayer is iffy.
So there's a couple of combat zones, and then there's a couple of key holding spots. So
yes.
The biggest key holding spot, like we mentioned before, is top jerk. You want to hold that one as much as possible because you just have sight over all the map.
Not all the map.
Well, most of the map.
A good
60%. Well,
let's say
70%
if you're red team and you push too far into blue base, that's top jerk is one of the worst positions to be in. You got to make sure if you're on red team, you have not pushed into blue base too much because otherwise it's a complete. It's just a kill zone. You're gonna get shot straight away. Because it's the one annoying thing that whenever I play Complex with not necessarily friends but random people, they will always say, "Oh, there's a guy on top of the building," because they don't know the call out, and they'll just say, "Oh, this game is just this map is so bad." It really isn't, because the problem with that one is there is no cover up there. Yes, you can move back, but if they move back, they're not shooting you. If you've got five people on your team or four people in Infinity Slayer, shooting at the guy on top jerk, he is going to go down.
If you have everyone shooting at him too.
Yes, and with the DMR, so don't. Well, light rifle's good for this one too. Light rifle is also a good one for this map. But if you don't use the BR on this map. If you're shooting at the guy, top jerk is not as big a control point as people think.
Yeah.
It's where you want to get if you're trying to get spawns and trying to protect capture the flag, but it really isn't as good in Slayer as people think.
And like you said, long range precision weapons is the best primary weapon to use on this map.
Because the best spawn to get top jerk is down dirt path, blue dirt path. Because their initial one, if you spawn out beside the right inside a garage, then you've got a bit of a problem. Mm-hmm. But if you spawn down blue dirt path, which is being weighted, your spawn is being weighted there, given that he is controlling that area of your spawns.
Yeah.
So unless there's someone in factory on red team, you are probably going to spawn there, and you can shoot across quite easily and kill him.
And most of the time, if people are spawning in blue dirt path, they're hiding behind factory, and there's multiple doorways that you can kind of poke out and just prod at people until they back down, or you have other teammates come in and help you out as well.
Personally, on Slayer, where I want to go is around the two bridges of factory.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even go to top jerk unless I know the other team is, sorry for saying this, bad, because I know that I'm going to get four shots in them before they even shoot back at me. Uh-huh. Because, I mean, this is why it's one of my favorite maps, because as I say an MLG player, I know what to do in these kind of maps.
So the two bridges he's talking about on the guide are Street and then Elbow.
Yeah.
Those are the two main bridges that you want to control on this map.
Yeah.
Other big battle points, in terms of Slayer, it's kind of just mixed all around because
Helipad is a huge one.
You're centrally controlled in the middle here, and then it's just kind of where the other people spawn.
Yeah.
I want to say there's frequent encounters in and around the dirt path, helipad area, and then maybe a few, like not many, but a few less around the ledge and the red dirt path.
Did you mention SWAT, by the way?
No.
Because this is quite possibly the worst map for SWAT. It's one of the few times I will say blue team is at an absolutely huge disadvantage. Because you can, to a pinpoint, predict spawns. And you can even have them spawning in the same exact area every single time. I was playing with a sim either yesterday or 2 days ago. It wasn't even a contest. You know, we're getting overkills, kill tacks, because you can.
Hmm.
You get one guy, not say on top jerk, but on the bridge to the left side towards cliff of top jerk. You have one guy sitting towards, not on helipad, but around the dirt path of helipad, and you can pinpoint their spawns at the back of the garage the whole time.
Not to self. Don't vote for SWAT on Complex.
It's awful.
All right.
It's terrible.
All right.
That needs to be removed from SWAT.
So the other big game type that's played on here is Capture the Flag.
That is the huge one. That's the one I love.
So this is where we're going to kind of get a little bit more strategy heavy.
Yes.
Because this is primarily a Capture the Flag map, in my opinion.
I would say so.
So there, depending on who you talk to, and I guess kind of depending when, you'll hear that one side is more powerful than the other, and then you'll hear the exact opposite. And I've actually flopped back and forth depending on gameplay as well. And it's just come to the point where it really depends on what kind of players you're playing with, and if you're playing with people you know or playing with people who know what they're doing. Because you can pick up randoms to actually know what they're doing and have a good game. There are certain strategies for playing this map depending on what side you spawn on.
Yes. I mean,
you want to go into details on that?
It's, again, with the spawning, because I would say if I had to say one team has a disadvantage, I would say blue team, because of the spawning. However, I mean, personally, when I play with people, they think the red team's at a disadvantage because they pick up the flag and they can run straight up lift. That's wrong. I'll point that out straight away. It gives you...
It depends on the team.
Well, it's, you take,
it does depend on the
you
team.
You need a good 3 seconds to get from there to the lift. Unless you're being pushed in the back by someone. I mean, if you don't have any protection, you are not grabbing that flag and getting up that lift if someone's not shooting you.
Well, if someone... If you have a pair that manages to get on top of Mini Jerk and just rain fire from down there, he has a pretty solid exit uplift and then out the back door through... through the factory.
He does, but I honestly don't like going up the lift. I really don't.
See, I do it every time.
If I was getting shot, then obviously I'm going up the lift. But if I'm getting shot, I'm not expecting to survive. So if I'm not getting shot, I don't go up lift. I go round the back and take the bottom entrance into factory. Personally.
See, well, what I do is, if I know a lot of the red team is either in the center, or like in around top jerk, or on street, or kind of pushing over to blue team flag, then I'll run up the lift, and depending on if they come up the middle, I'll then drop down and then go back through the factory. Or if there's no one even coming, if we've pretty much spawn trapped them in the back, in the warehouse, then I'll just run over the bridge, run through the factory, and then I pretty much have cover almost all the way back to the flag cap.
It really is all dependent on your team and where the other team are. Because obviously if the team is on top jerk, the last thing you want to do, I always find going through the courtyard area, the middle courtyard, it's the quickest way. It's a bit dangerous when you come out the other side, but if you do but at any point you can duck in the factory.
Mm-hmm.
Where blue team falls apart on capturing the flag is the final area. I have stopped, and my team has stopped many a time, when people either jump on top of the helipad and they're running around the back of helipad, or when they're coming out in front of their base via the ramp.
Mm-hmm.
You have to run through that base. You have to.
Yeah.
If you're going up against a good team, they can hold that base down, and people might say, well, the flag's not open. Yes, okay, but all you're going to do is just run for the flag if it's in the open area, and they're going to take you down. And the worst part is they're probably going to counter cap on you.
And that's the flip side, where red team has an advantage. Yeah. Because if red team is holding top jerk and the street, they have more of an open shot to blue flag than they have that blue team would have over to red flag, because there's not much of a viewing angle from top jerk and the bridges to the red flag spawn. So,
I mean, the only way red don't want to take the flag is under that factory route. That's the worst place to take the flag for red. If you're red, you go through the bottom of helipad, you do go through the bottom floor, but you go up. You go straight up. You're straight up the ramp. You don't stay in the bottom.
So I've had the paths I usually take, and it does depend on where the enemies are. Sometimes I'll run through bottom factory, sometimes I'll run under street through the factory courtyard, or I'll run up that front ramp and then go through the kitchen.
I would say if you're running up front ramp, you got to realize that the people you're playing against are not good. You can, because if you're able to run up front ramp, either you got very lucky and they're capping your flag and your base, or they're all dead.
Well, most of the time, if red team is holding top jerk or that area in the computer room, I'll run to the ramp and then use it as cover, and then run under street. And if
I see a lot of people coming, then I'll run under factory and wait for team support. And if not, I'll just run under street and then run right by the factory. Not go under the elbow, but then go through under the mini jerk.
I mean, a route that not many people let you take, because it is dangerous. But if your team is set up on top jerk, you are also waiting spawns to helipad. It's taking the right side of ramp, going around via kitchen, and going underneath the pathway. Because then, if they are spawning over here, you've got that whole protection. There's only one gap they can shoot you, and if you jump over, you're already halfway through it.
Well, like you said, it's dangerous because you have this whole open area until you get there.
Well, no, but that's the whole point. If they're spawning a helipad, you've only got that short bit of open area, because then you can use the ramp as cover. Whereas if you're running up the ramp and they're spawning over there...
Well, if they're spawning on a helipad, then they can pretty quickly get over there and see you running through that.
Well, no, but they don't always spawn on a helipad. It's a helipad back dirt path.
And then back dirt path.
But yeah. If you're running up there, they can shoot you all the way up the ramp. And
then you can drop off.
You can drop off the right-hand side, but then if you drop off the left-hand side, they're still shooting you.
Yeah.
And then even if you decide to go up the ramp, they can still shoot you on that street.
Right.
So, you know...
So we just kind of point out the two big power struggles on this map.
It really is. That's why I don't like saying that one team has advantage over the other.
One team may have a strategic advantage depending on what they hold at what time and depending on what players
I mean, holding top jerk is much more beneficial to red team than blue team, obviously, because it's got more cover fire on the flag.
Mm-hmm.
But blue team has mini jerk.
Mini jerk and elbow.
Yeah, and the ledge area. They have that, and so this map isn't as unbalanced as people think. It is on SWAT though. it's awful on SWAT.
Yeah, I've had games go both ways.
Yeah, so if you have games go both ways, people are saying both one is over the other. Then it's just that's the way it is, and people don't know how to play the game. This is the most commonly played map along with Solus that people don't know how to play. Correctly, that I would say. They know how to play it, but they don't know how to play it
right.
Correctly to actually use the map to its full potential.
Almost Haven, too, because I come across a lot of people that don't know about those places where you can sneak in shots.
Also, up the jumps.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, the MLG version of Haven's actually a lot better because they allow you go the back pathway where blue team spawns, I think.
So blue team spawns
by
on
by
the bottom.
By the river. By the huge cliff.
Yeah, that's where...
Okay, what MLG does, they added a pathway so you could actually go, like, boxes. Or, I say, Ghosty Army added boxes so you could jump onto the side pathways to run up to red and blue base.
Huh, cool.
But the point is, that's not a spawn in MLG. The spawns aren't there.
Right, okay.
Because they're the other places, but that's Haven. But, you know, people... just don't understand how to play the map. But if you know how to play the map, you can go very, very, very positive on this map.
Right. But like we said, that center control, the street, top jerk, and elbow are pretty much the three essential places that you need to control in order to really kind of dominate the map.
But to break that control, the best place to get rid of top jerk is blue dirt path. It's where you want to hold it.
For top jerk, yes.
To get rid of that.
Please. Yep.
And it's not hard. It isn't.
No.
It really is, and you mean you can...
Unless you're having a bad day and you can't shoot well.
then you're having a bad day, and it doesn't matter where you are, it doesn't matter if you're behind them, they're still going to out-DMR you, so I mean...
Yep.
That's the whole point. But that's why I would say that if you do spawn on blue dirt path, switch to your light rifle. Because if you zoom in, it's four shot. There you go. Done. If you're good with a light rifle.
If you're not good with...
Well, some people are, some people aren't. I mean, personally, I can't use a light rifle unless I scope in.
I cannot either.
But light rifle, there's a good one.
Even scoped, I can't use it.
Scoped, I can. Scoped is like just scoping him with a DMR. Yeah, it is.
No, it's not.
Yeah, it is.
No, it's not.
It takes a little getting used to, but it is.
It takes a lot of getting used to. Alright, I think that pretty much covers the map complex.
I would think so.
So, thank you guys for listening in.
Apart from Flood.
Yeah, apart from Flood, which...
Hide on top jerk. There you go, done.
Yeah, it's really easy to get shotgun kills up there because you have...
And you also drop off both ways.
You have three choke points.
Yeah. So you have three people up there and just hope that you can shoot.
Yeah.
Don't waste your pistol ammo.
Yep.